Today is April 9th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 122, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR at macobserver.com.
You know, I'm glad that we have the qualification, comment or question anything about the show, because, you know, I'm really kind of concerned about what kinds of questions we would be getting otherwise.
Indeed. You know, and I think at this point you would be welcome to quote Anya from Buffy the Vampire Slayer when she tells her boyfriend, "Still funny, honey."
You know, the great thing about having our own podcast is it's okay for us to think we're funny.
Yeah, that's, it's lucky for us, lucky for us. So how you doing?
I'm doing excellent, and I'm in the process of getting prepped for all of the excitement, hopefully excitement, that will be happening next week at NAB.
Yes, you know what's going to be the least exciting thing about NAB?
The food?
Nope.
Do tell.
Me running the morning shift again.
You know, I have a totally different perspective on that. Isn't it? How about that?
Yeah, it's funny how that works. Now, when are you leaving?
Well, I'm going to be leaving Sunday, and then I'll be enjoying the excitement that is Las Vegas for pretty much a whole week.
Yeah, so when are you coming back?
I'll be coming back, I believe, late Friday night. Thursday night.
Late Thursday night.
Right.
Oh, no, we'll have to talk
about it. Oh, no, wait. I am gone for 2 weeks. Yeah, that's it.
So we will be covering NAB from NAB, or actually I guess I'm the only one that says NAB. We will be covering NAB the entire week, direct from Las Vegas, thanks to Mr. Jeff, and should be an interesting week.
I'm thinking it will be. And I'm looking forward to seeing what people feel at the expo about Avid not being on site and Apple not even being there. It's like the two big names, you know. What's up with that?
Yep. And NAB is, of course, National Association of Broadcasters.
Right.
And which is, you know, usually a pretty big Apple show, but as Jeff said, they won't be there. So we're going to have to see what the show's like.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll still be crazy. Just in a different way.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And with that, we should probably get on to the news.
I think that sounds like a great idea. Apple is seeing red over New York's green logo. Adobe's 64-bit apps are coming to Windows first. Final Cut Server finally sees the light of day. And iPhones get cheap in Germany. Microsoft's buyout battle with Yahoo is heating up, and Germany's iTunes store now offers more than music. And this week's quick tip, fixing iPhone sync problems.
Apple is not at all sanguine about New York City's efforts to go green, at least when it comes to the logo the city is trying to trademark. The company has filed a challenge against a federal trademark registration effort by Green NYC, saying the logo the nonprofit is trying to trademark is too similar to Apple's own logo, which has been in use since 1977. Green NYC's position is that the Infinity Apple symbol and the group's environmental approach are unique, a key word in the area of registered trademarks, and that there is no infringement. In the fascinating world of trademark disputes, one of the testing areas is often whether or not the businesses compete in the same market and whether or not a logo could cause confusion in the marketplace. Apple could have a tough challenge on its hand for that test, and the differences in the logos themselves could be an issue. While both the Green NYC and Apple Inc. logos share a single leaf element, which point in different directions, differences between the two include the infinity element, the bite, and the stem. Since the story first broke, Apple has managed to garner some negative PR for being a bully, as well as a generous portion of FU from the large Apple-friendly market that is New York City. In other words, this is yet another brilliant legal move from the company that has quickly managed to alienate some of its own customers.
Adobe Photoshop product manager John Knack says that a 64-bit version of the Creative Suite is in the works, but it will be for Windows only. Most likely, Mac users won't get to use 64-bit versions of Photoshop, InDesign, and Illustrator until Creative Suite 5 ships. Mr. Knack said, quote, "The development is frankly bittersweet for us. On the one hand, we're delighted to be breaking new ground with Photoshop, and when processing very large files on a suitably equipped machine, Photoshop X64 realizes some big performance gains. On the other hand, we work very hard at maintaining parity across platforms, and it's a drag that the Mac X64 revision will take longer to deliver. We will get there, but not in CS4," unquote. Since Creative Suite 4 for the Mac will be 32-bit only, that means Windows users will have a couple of features Mac users won't. Most notably, Windows users will be able to work with files larger than 4 gigabytes, since a 64-bit version of CS4 will be able to access larger amounts of memory. It also means that 64-bit Windows users will see about a 10% performance improvement compared to 32-bit Windows and Mac OS X users. The reason Mac users will remain in the 32-bit world for CS4, according to Mr. Knack, is because Photoshop and the other Creative Suite applications were written in Carbon instead of the Cocoa application framework. Since Apple decided to drop its plans for a 64-bit version of Carbon, that means Adobe's applications must be ported to Cocoa to remain on a 64-bit development path, which is no small undertaking. On the surface, it could look like this is a manifestation of the alleged Apple versus Adobe feud. More likely, however, this is just simply a situation where there isn't enough time to transition the Creative Suite code base from the older Carbon to the newer Cocoa in time for the Creative Suite 4 launch.
Mr. Knack added, "My Sharona." That's a really stupid joke, but I couldn't stop myself.
You know, but you entertain me, and thank you.
That's all that counts. Apple finally began shipping Final Cut Server on April 8th, nearly a year after it was unveiled. The media asset management tool was first announced on April 16th, 2007, and was released, April 8th. We already said that. Final Cut Server includes a cross-platform client, supports content browsing, review and approval on a local network or over the interwebs, and automatically catalogs asset collections. It supports simple keyword searches as well as complex searches that include IPTC, XMP, and XML metadata, customizable templates that fit typical broadcast, post-production, and educational environments, and controls for defining user permissions on an asset or project basis. It also supports monitoring assets through the production process and can automatically send project status alerts to editors. Final Cut Server is priced at $999 US for a 10-client license or $1,999 for an unlimited client license. Both of those licenses cover one server.
Morgan Keegan and Company lowered its rating on Apple stock to underperform from a market perform rating on Tuesday, April 8th, coming a day after Thomas Wiesel and Partners raised its own rating for Apple to overweight. Morgan Keegan and Company said that decreased consumer spending in the tech space, along with ongoing budgetary issues in U.S. public schools, was going to hurt Apple. At issue is the economy, where the firm sees, quote, "mounting evidence of broad-based weakness in consumer technology spending in the U.S. and in Europe," unquote. In contrast, Thomas Wiesel and Partners upgraded Apple to overweight on Monday, citing the company's long-term growth opportunities. Thomas Wiesel and Partners also raised its target price for Apple to $195 per share, up from $188.
iTunes Store customers in Germany can purchase More Than Music as of April 2nd, now that TV shows are available at the German version of the online media store. The German iTunes Store is offering programming from ProSieben, SAT1, ZDF, or ZDF, as the case may be, Enterprises, and Brainpool, along with content from ABC Studios and MTV Networks. Shows at the iTunes Store in Germany include the ever-popular Switch, Timits and Friends, GSG9, Shaolin Wuzang, Stromberg, and more. U.S. programming includes Lost, Grey's Anatomy, Desperate Housewives, SpongeBob SquarePants, South Park, along with several other popular American shows. TV shows are priced at either €1.99 or €2.49 each. No word yet on whether or not Hogan's Heroes will be added.
That's not right.
Hey, all Hogan's right. Heroes happens to be very bizarrely popular in Germany.
How about that?
How about that?
All right. And as long as we're on the Germany thing, T-Mobile customers in Germany can get a new iPhone for only €99 thanks to a promotional deal the cell carrier is offering. The promotion marks the first time Apple's iPhone has been available at a subsidized price. So far, T-Mobile is only offering the 8-gigabyte model at the subsidized price, and the deal is available only to customers that sign up for the company's Complete XL plan, and that will be between April 7th and June 30th. CCS Insight analyst Ben Wood commented, quote, "This price cut will raise a few eyebrows and is very interesting indeed. That could mean T-Mobile is clearing the channel for a new model," unquote. T-Mobile, however, isn't confirming that new iPhone models are on the way. Company spokesman Alexander Graf von Schmettau stated, quote, unquote, "You have to ask Apple about that, and I'm sorry I don't have a clever German accent to do that one in." And he did add that after a phone has been available for 5 months or so, T-Mobile typically offers some kind of sales promotion.
Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, the ever-popular Steve Ballmer, presented the Yahoo Board of Directors a letter on April 5th that in no uncertain terms gives the internet search company three weeks to agree to a buyout or face a more hostile takeover attempt. The ultimatum states that Microsoft is ready to sidestep Yahoo's board and present an offer directly to the company's shareholders. Mr. Ballmer said, quote, "If we have not concluded an agreement within the next 3 weeks, we will be compelled to take our case directly to your shareholders, including the initiative of a proxy contest to elect an alternative slate of directors for the Yahoo board. The substantial premium reflected in our initial proposal anticipated a friendly transaction with you. If we are forced to take an offer directly to your shareholders, that action will have an undesirable impact on the value of your company from our perspective, which will be reflected in the terms of our proposal. In other words, if you didn't like how much money we offered to you the first time, we're going to offer you less."
No, that's capitalism.
That's capitalism. Mr. Ballmer drove his point home saying, and inexplicably channeling Bill Gates, quote, "It is unfortunate that by choosing not to enter into substantive negotiations with us, you have failed to give due consideration to a transaction that has tremendous benefits for Yahoo shareholders and employees. We think it is critically important not to let this window of opportunity pass," unquote. I just don't know why Mr. Ballmer was channeling Bill Gates like that. It just seems bizarre, doesn't it? Especially in a written letter.
It's kind of creepy.
It is kind of creepy. Microsoft presented Yahoo with an unsolicited buyout offer of $44.6 billion on February 1st, following the company's reported 23% drop in earnings. Yahoo rejected Microsoft's offer and then began talking with Time Warner about a possible AOL deal to block Microsoft from attempting said hostile takeover. Oh, boy, I missed my cue there. Mr. Ballmer added by way of color.
Developers.
Yeah. Oh, good old monkey boy.
Some people's kids,
yeah.
All right, and even considering how tough of an act that is to follow, here we go. Yahoo isn't interested in Microsoft's threats of a hostile takeover attempt and said as much in response to CEO Steve Ballmer's letter. Yahoo CEO Jerry Yang, or should I go Yang? Yang contends that Microsoft's buyout offer substantially undervalues the internet search company's true market value. Despite the ultimatum, Yahoo doesn't seem to be interested in Microsoft's strong-arm tactics. Mr. Yang said, quote, "Our board carefully considered your unsolicited proposal, unanimously concluded that it was not in the best interests of Yahoo and our stockholders, and rejected it publicly on February 11th, 2008. Our board's view of your proposal has not changed. We continue to believe that your proposal is not in the best interest of Yahoo and our stockholders. Contrary to statements in your letter, stockholders representing a significant portion of our outstanding shares have indicated to us that your proposal substantially undervalues Yahoo." Mr. Yang went on to point out that Microsoft's claim that Yahoo has not been willing to enter into negotiations is patently wrong. Apparently, the two companies have participated in several meetings to discuss the possible buyout, and that Mr. Ballmer himself was at two of those events. While Mr. Ballmer's letter depicts Yahoo's actions as counterproductive, Mr. Yang said that isn't so, and even went so far as to claim Microsoft has failed to cooperate. He added, quote, As a follow-up to a recent meeting among our respective legal advisors we had on this topic, and at your request, we provided to you on March 28th a list of additional information we would need to further our understanding of the regulatory issues associated with any transaction. To date, you have still not provided any of the requested information. Unquote. Based on the two companies' verbal sparring, it seems less likely that they will reach an amicable buyout agreement.
And that sound means it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And I think that we should start with this Microsoft ultimatum.
The ultimatum. You know, I was kind of hoping that maybe we had a kinder, gentler Microsoft that wasn't into throwing chairs around anymore.
No, I don't think Monkey Boy gets it.
No, I don't think he does. And you know, when I originally wrote the article about Yahoo's response to Microsoft's mm-hmm. ultimatum, that the headline was going to be Yahoo to Microsoft, get bent. And I thought maybe that just wasn't completely appropriate, so I went ahead and changed it. And but still, I mean, that was the impression that I got from Yahoo's response, that I think that they're really not happy with Microsoft, and I don't think that they're just doing the posturing for more money thing. I think that they really are pissed off at Microsoft right now.
Well, there's exactly one company that thinks that this buyout would be good. And that's Microsoft.
Right.
I mean, no one has said that this would be good for, you know, for anything. No one. I don't know. I suppose there might be someone out there who said that this would be just, you know, just what the doctor ordered for something. But I haven't seen it. And, you know, Microsoft at this point, Steve Ballmer is acting like, I mean, just a markedly spoiled brat. It's kind of funny. I mean, his threat. Okay, so I mean, understand that Jerry Yang is answerable to his board, and they in turn are answerable to the stockholders.
Right.
As Mr. Yang said, many of their major shareholders have said that Microsoft offer undervalue the company. Right.
Right.
I'm getting to a point here.
I'm patient.
The understanding that he is answerable to his shareholders, the idea of Microsoft saying, oh, yeah, well, if you don't do what we say, we're going to offer less directly to your shareholders. I mean, that's just a ridiculous argument to be making. The shareholders have, I mean, they would not have rejected the offer that they've got if they hadn't figured that they were going to have the backing of their shareholders.
Right. You know, and the impression I get is that Microsoft is really confused right now why Yahoo wouldn't be bending over backwards for the opportunity to be gobbled up.
Right. And that's, of course, because Microsoft doesn't understand that if they gobble up Yahoo, they're going to take Yahoo and make it into a property worth a lot less money.
Right. Yeah. You know, look at Hotmail. That's a perfect example where Microsoft gobbled up the company, and then it just suddenly wasn't good.
Right. Yeah, funny how that worked.
Yeah. You know, another thing that gets me about this whole thing, as soon as Microsoft put their offer on the table, I saw so many articles on the interwebs and in magazines and newspapers where people are talking about, well, this is the best offer that Yahoo has, and this is the one that they need to take. But basically what they were doing was talking as if Yahoo had already been put up on the block for sale, and that the company had been fishing around for bids. And I really don't think that's the case. And so I'm just kind of rambling now. But my point is...
Microsoft is offering... Like, one of the things that they said that we didn't mention when we read the news is that Steve Ballmer said that it's telling that no other parties have come to the table since we made our offer. Well... Yeah, because Yahoo wasn't offering itself for sale.
Thank you for getting my point where it was supposed to go.
Thanks. Yeah, I got your back, man.
I appreciate that.
And it's, I don't know, the whole thing is almost, surreal is not quite the right word, but it borders on surreal because, you know, Microsoft is acting like, you know, Yahoo is in need of a bailout, and they're not. Yeah, Yahoo is losing the search war, and yeah, their revenues recently fell, but there are a lot of issues that go into that, and the fact is that Yahoo almost isn't even competing with Google anymore.
Right.
In terms of search. I mean, the Yahoo search engine is you know, not that big a deal at all. The Yahoo is a portal and content company is where they make their money.
Right. And so for Microsoft to assume that they could absorb Yahoo and then suddenly be a powerhouse in the internet search advertising market is wrong.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. I mean, yeah, if Microsoft buys Yahoo, and unless they leave them as a standalone company, they're going to basically take a property that's worth somewhere between $30 and $50 billion, maybe a little more, and, you know, turn it into a property that's worth, you know, a few billion at best. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I really don't see Microsoft, assuming they do snag Yahoo, I don't see them just leaving it alone and saying, okay, now we own you, go do your own thing.
No, there's no way. Especially with all this crap, all the smack talking.
Right.
With all the smack talk means basically that... that Microsoft is going to end up having to or wanting to replace the entire management team, and that's going to be a catastrophe in and of itself. I mean, you know, I mean, Microsoft is just, I love the Mac business unit. Everything else the company does sucks. The possible exception of the Xbox. The Xbox is finally not sucking, but it's not making money either.
Right, and why is that? It's because people still see that there's other products out there that are better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting. You look at the PS3. Sony has mismanaged that just about as badly as Microsoft first mismanaged the Xbox.
Well, you know, that's Sony's product. Special way. They're really good at that. Matter of fact, they're market leaders at screwing up the product like
that. Yeah, mismanaging their own remarkable assets. Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Well, they have years of experience.
Years of experience. So anyway, long story short, Steve Ballmer is going to maybe learn for the first time that Microsoft doesn't necessarily get what Microsoft wants.
You know, I don't think he'll learn. I think if Microsoft doesn't get Yahoo, he'll just be really pissed off. He'll throw a temper tantrum, and he will not get why Yahoo didn't bend over backwards to get absorbed and assimilated.
You know, and if that happens, look out, Alta Vista. I really cracked myself up there.
Interwebs humor. Yeah, he has interwebs. It.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, speaking of companies mismanaging things, how about that lack of 64-bit?
Yeah. Okay. You know, when I saw John Knack's blog post about the whole 64-bit roadmap, mm-hmm. I read through the whole thing, and he made some valid arguments about why the Mac isn't going to have 64-bit Creative Suite until CS5, mm-hmm. which means that, you know, we'll have to go through CS4, whenever that comes out, however long that lasts. So my guess is we have at least 3 years on the Mac platform before we have a chance of a 64-bit version of Creative Suite, and it'll probably be longer than that. So, all right. So when I was finished reading the whole thing, my thought was, all right, so you've been doing everything in Carbon. Apple has been pushing Cocoa for a long time. And so why haven't you guys been moving over to the Cocoa platform?
Well, and the reason why is because they didn't want to, because they don't respect the Mac platform. And at least that's my opinion, man. I mean, you know, if there are folks at Adobe listening and we've just, you know, my impression on that is wrong, feel free to correct me. But this to me seems like another dissing of the Mac platform.
You know, if we are wrong and someone from Adobe is listening, yes, please contact us, because I will be happy to write an article explaining why things are going the way they are. I will be more than happy to do that. So you know how to contact us. Hop to it.
Yeah, hop to it. And an argument can be made that that Adobe had its plans to use Carbon in place when Apple said there would be a 64-bit version of Carbon. Right? You can make that argument. But the fact is that Carbon does not maximize Mac OS X like Cocoa does. It just doesn't. Right. And here is this major application, one of the most complex applications available on Windows or the Mac OS X platform, and Adobe's developing it in Carbon. So, you know, that issue can only be laid at Adobe's feet.
You know, I understand that it takes lots and lots of resources to port applications that are as complex as Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign from one development platform to another. I mean, huge undertaking. But if you know you have to do it, you should figure out a way to have the resources in place to make that happen. It just stands to reason to me.
Yeah, and I don't think this process should have been starting now. I think this process should have been starting a long time ago. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, most of Apple now is 64-bit.
Right. You know, here's something. Is it possible that Adobe had to allocate a lot more resources to Windows because they have to have a 64-bit and a 32-bit version? So they have to have two separate versions of applications for Windows. Mm-hmm. But whereas on the Mac, you just have to create the one version, and then OS X knows what kind of processor you have, and it does its thing. So, you know, there's a little thing inside my head, in the back of my head, saying, well, geez, did they have to allocate a lot more resources to the Windows side, and so now the Mac side is suffering?
That is very possible, and as a matter of fact, it rings true to me. Of course, we don't actually know, but I just... Again, that sort of comes back to that disrespecting the Mac platform thing. I don't think that they respect their Mac business. I just don't. I think that they, I don't know if it's a resentment. I don't know what it is. It's weird to me that a company that started off on the Mac platform has just had this sort of, you know, redheaded stepchild approach to the Mac platform for years now. It annoys me.
You know, and all of the Adobe employees that I've ever interacted with, well, not every one of them, but almost every single one of them has had a Mac computer, not a Windows machine.
And you know, of course, that says that at least at the rank and file level that I'm just wrong. And, you know, and I'd like to be wrong on this one, actually. I would very much like to be wrong on this one.
Well, you know, it's possible for the rank and file people to be favoring the Mac, and then the upper management to be focusing more on Windows because they seem to think that's where they're going to get more money. I don't know. But it shows to me that that even internally, Adobe needs to be paying a little bit more attention to the Mac than they are, because their rank and file people appear to be preferring that platform, you know, mm-hmm. based on the employees I've encountered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, geez, you got to take care of your customers and you got to take care of your employees too. So, yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah, what's up with that? What's up with that? All right, well, let's leave that bad taste out of, or rinse it out of my mouth here. I'm going to drink some water.
All right, so while you're drinking water and we're on the what's up with that, how about what's up with the whole Apple logo thing in New York?
Ridiculous. You know, I look at that logo. I'm not a trademark expert by any stretch of the imagination, but Apple's been smoking some green apple here. Because
they've been toking the Granny Smith.
Yeah. Even if there was a slight more resemblance between the two logos, there's no upside here. There is no upside here. Apple is attacking a green nonprofit in a very, very Apple Incorporated friendly city called the Big Apple. Apple is suing the Big Apple for trademark infringement. Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know, when I saw this, I was baffled. And I'm used to seeing really stupid things all the time because, well, when your job is to stay on top of the news, you see a lot of news. And there's a lot of stupid news out there. I saw this and I'm going, what could possibly be behind this? I mean, what benefit is it to Apple to sue over this this environmental group logo? I was trying to find something between the lines, you know, and what everyone was saying, and finally I sat back and went, got me.
Yeah, there's no upside.
Yeah, I'm just not getting
upside. You know, this is going to generate ill will in New York. New York folk take their city seriously. And I've been to New York. There's not a lot of concern for environmentalism in New York. I remember when my wife and I first went there, she was just appalled that there was no way for her to recycle her plastic bottles and glass bottles and things like that. And, you know, this is going to bring a lot of attention to Green NYC within New York itself. And there's going to be a lot of protectionist, you know, FU sentiments that are generated, at least in some quarters. And again, that's just part of why there's no upside. There's just no upside for this suit. And the logos don't resemble each other, not even a little bit. There are so many Apple logos, you know, involve the Apple across the entire country. You know, and I've seen some that infringe a lot more than this one, because this one doesn't infringe. It just doesn't even infringe.
You know, the upside to this is actually for the company itself, the environmental company, because they can't buy this kind of publicity. I mean, they're all over the web now.
They got a lot of mainstream attention.
Right. I mean, they're showing up in podcasts and, you know, wow, you just can't buy that kind of publicity.
Yeah. So maybe this is actually part of Apple's own greener initiative. They figured by suing, they would, you know, raise Green NYC's presence in the marketplace.
Well, that's brilliant. That's almost as smart as saying, hey, you know, Yahoo, we offered you this much money for your company, and we're going to lower that offer, and you're going to be glad for it.
Mm-hmm. Good old monkey boy. Yeah, this is a mistake, though. This is a mistake for Apple to do. Keep repeating myself, there's no upside for Apple on this. And, you know, quite frankly, I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm just at a loss on this one. I'm just not getting it. I don't know. Maybe they brought in consultants, and maybe they're the same consultants that told them that making a black Performa with a TV card in it was a smart idea. I don't know.
Maybe. I actually, you know, there's been a lot of wacky legal moves from Apple in the last few years, and this is just yet another one of them. I mean, you know, suing journalists to try to get their sources, mistake. Well, that's actually the big legal. That's actually the only right. one that's popping into my head. But
now you have two for your head.
Now I have two. Yay! Next time there's one, I can list two quickly.
There you go. And my guess is that at some point along the way, Apple will oblige you and file another wacky zany lawsuit, and so then you'll be able to reference two.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, so maybe that's it. They're doing this for you, Brian. You should be happy.
Yay. All right. I think I hear the quick tip riff.
Oh, good.
Yep, that was the quick tip riff.
Sweet. All right. So this week's quick tip is on how to fix syncing related problems with your iPhone or iPod Touch. And by syncing, I mean data syncing, not, oh my God, it just fell over the side of the boat and it's disappearing in the lake. If that's your problem, I hope it was insured, pal.
That's funny.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks. All right, so here's the deal. Occasionally, your iPhone or iPod Touch will start syncing once you connect it to your Mac, and then it drops out of the sync process. And once that starts, every time you connect your iPhone or iPod Touch back to your computer, the cycle starts up again. So every time you plug in your handheld, you can't synchronize. It's very annoying, but it's an easy fix. The thing is, though, you're not going to find the fix in iTunes. Now, you'll know if you're suffering from this wonderful little headache, because the sync process will continue to stop unexpectedly. So, you know, that's what you're going to be watching for. iTunes will display a dialog warning that your handheld stopped communicating and the sync process was canceled. So if that's what you're seeing, here's what you do to get the sync cycle back to normal again. First, connect your iPhone or iPod Touch to your Mac. After the sync process fails, launch iSync, and that's an application that's nicely nestled away in your applications folder, iSync. All right, then from the iSync menu, choose Preferences, and then at the bottom of the iSync Preferences window, click the Reset Sync History button. Now, iSync is going to pop up a little dialog that explains to you what happens when you reset the sync history, that the current history gets lost and all that. Go ahead and click the second Reset Sync History button that you get. Apple just wants to make sure you get what's about to happen. All right, so then quit iSync. Now, the next time you plug your iPhone or iPod Touch back into your Mac, it should start syncing again without any hassles. Now, since you did reset the sync history, your first post-reset sync will probably take longer than you expect, and that's because it's having to match up all of the information and not just the stuff that changed, because as far as your computer knows, there hasn't been a full sync yet. Now, depending on how much information you're actually pushing off to your iPhone or iPod Touch, it could end up taking a few extra seconds to complete that initial sync. It could take several minutes. It could even take longer. So just be prepared for that. But there you go. That's all there is to it.
And I might add, it'll take longer than it should because the iPhone uses USB instead of FireWire, but that's another issue.
Yeah. You know, on a side note, I'm really bummed that FireWire is not an option on the iPod or iPhone product line.
Hell yeah. Yeah, bugs the crap out of me.
Yeah,
I hate that Apple. USB sucks. USB sucks. USB 2.0 sucks a little bit less.
Yeah, you know, the great thing about USB 2.0 is that it's not USB 1.1. And yes, it's great for mice and keyboards and all that stuff. But man, when it comes to data syncing, that's not what USB is for. Sending little bits of data through that connection is okay. But when you have to send lots of data through, it's just not up to the task. It bums me out, man.
Bums me out too. Take us out.
Okie doke. All right, if you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com, and remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, and the bass is by Boom, recorded for DMO. That's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We will see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Thanks, everyone.